Hi there, and thank you for tuning in to The Social Circus, where every week we dive into a variety of topics covering social media, mindset, and how to run your business. I hope that you enjoy today's episode.
Hello, my lovely listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Social Circus. I am your host each and every week, Sarah Thompson, and today I am thrilled to be joined by Annie Gashiru, who is a racial equality coach and consultant. Welcome, Annie.
Hey there. I'm so excited to be here, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so thrilled to have you as a guest on my podcast. I have been following you for a little while now, and I'm a little bit of a fangirl. For my listeners, could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do? Because I am certain most people haven't heard of the title that I just gave you as a racial equality coach.
I'm actually a racial equity.
Sorry.
No. That is absolutely fine. And I might, maybe it's a good opportunity to talk about the difference between equality and equity.
Yes.
I am a racial equity coach for online business owners who want to be intentionally inclusive so they can have a racially equitable business. And my way of teaching and doing this work is through the lens of calling in rather than calling out, because this is work that a lot of people, particularly white people who are stepping into this work, feel very uncomfortable. This is the kind of work that makes you feel like, oh, I don't want to be, you know, classified as somebody who is excluding or worse still, racist. So people tiptoe around this work. And so my way of teaching is very much calling in, allowing people to make mistakes, because we will all make mistakes, giving people grace and compassion through the learning process. And the learning process is lifelong, so that they can be allies who are not afraid to take action, allies who will make mistakes and do better next time, but just allowing more people to come into this work. And so that's what I do. I love it. I'm passionate about it.
Yes.
And what inspired me to get into this is I'm a Black migrant woman, and I've called Australia home for 24 years now at the time of recording. And when I came to Australia, I feel like it's the first time I discovered I was Black, Sarah. And it's not because I didn't know that. Of course I knew I was Black. But because of the lack of representation, being in spaces where I happened to be the only. And so going through university, doing my bachelor's, my master's degree, working in corporate Australia in HR as a HR specialist, and just getting gravitated into diversity and inclusion projects, and then becoming a mom and just wanting to be that role model where my children could feel comfortable seeing themselves in their skin and seeing themselves represented. And so I feel like I was called into this work. And
Wow. Why
I do it, I want to more people to see themselves represented and to be comfortable in the skin that they're in, and to see that they are welcome, they are included, and indeed they can work with all sorts of online business owners who will value them and treat them with respect.
Oh my goodness, I've got all the goosebumps listening to you, Annie. That's so wonderful to hear. And I love that you said that we are allowed to make mistakes, because I think that's one of our biggest fears as business owners, is that I'm certain that all of my listeners will agree with me on this. None of us intend to be racist. None of us intend to marginalize people with our language. And I think, I know for me, one of my biggest fears is doing it accidentally, doing it inadvertently. So can we just circle back? Because I said your title incorrectly, because I said equality and you said equity. Would you be able to explain the difference between those so that we can understand where that sits?
Absolutely. And I love it when people get the definition of this. So equality is when we treat everybody the same. We're not treating anybody less favorably than the other. So when we're hearing people talking about the gender pay gap, you know, we're in the month of March and we're amplifying women's voices right now, International Women's Day and all of that. And we're talking about closing that gender pay gap, and we're talking about equality because women want to be treated the same as men, not less favorably, but the same. When it comes to equity really addresses treating people in individually based on their individual circumstances. And it's all about, Sarah, leveling the playing field so that those who need the most support get the most support. So whilst we're saying we want to treat everybody the same in equality, your needs are not the same as my needs. You could be a single mom who has to get to work at 8 a.m., but you don't have the support. You do not have the support at home. So you've got to drop your child at daycare and you're being requested to be there at a certain time. But equity looks at that person's individual circumstance and says, maybe you can start at 9 o'clock. Maybe you can leave a little bit early because you have to go and pick up your child. It's about leveling the playing field and taking into account the different needs of the person so that we are all being treated in an equitable way and we have access to the things that we need. And this is where I support online business owners to have equitable practices in their business so that those who need the most support, which when it comes to race is people of color, Black people, Indigenous people, how can they implement more equitable practices so that they're not excluding without knowing and they're giving the most support where it's needed so that we can begin to level that playing field?
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for explaining that. I definitely did not understand the distinction between those two, and it's really important to understand that. And it's okay if you don't know the specifics of this, but how do we measure that? How do we look at that? Like you said, we just had the gender pay gap report come out, which is incredibly disheartening for us females, but it's very easy to measure. It's very quantifiable. But how do we measure things like racial equity? Are we looking at that as a nation globally? Is the UN looking at what are the measures for that?
That's a difficult question because measuring... It's not a numbers game, you know. When it comes to racial equity, there's a lot of unconscious bias. There's a lot of awareness that needs to happen. So it's not something necessarily that's a numbers game. It's something that you need to begin to be so aware of it that it becomes part of how you look at things. Are you looking through a lens that is through inclusion? And in so doing, it's about shifting your perspective. How are we beginning to shift our perspectives? So when I look at the clients that I've worked with for quite some time and how their businesses look like in terms of measurability, these are people who are very attuned with the kind of lead magnets that they create. They have an inclusive lens. They're not just speaking to one group or one dominant group in terms of the language that they're using. They're trying to be as inclusive as possible. When you look at the clientele, when you get into their mastermind, you are seeing, whilst it may not be equal all around, you are seeing that there are people from different backgrounds. It's not just potentially just a group that looks and sounds the same. But you're also seeing that the people in the group, perhaps who identify as Black or people of color, are not left behind, that these are six-figure businesses or even seven-figure businesses. They're not the ones in the group who are struggling because maybe they've been given a little bit of extra support to understand their unique needs in order for them to thrive in the area that they have chosen. And so when you look at businesses like that, who have really taken the time to become aware of the kind of marketing that they're using, become aware of the kind of people that they're attracting, become really aware of the kind of space that they're holding and how they are holding space for people who come from different backgrounds, they create spaces where people feel safer in their presence. And so whilst it's not something that you can measure tangibly, it's something where somebody who has a marginalized identity, when they step into their space, they feel different. They feel seen. They feel respected. They feel valued. They're like, I'm going to spend some time with Sarah. She makes me feel a certain way. And I think she gets me. And I think she's a person for me in this stage of business.
Oh my gosh. Annie, you just gave so many amazing tips. I don't even know where to start with that, to be honest. You were brilliant. So from our perspective, because I know a lot of my audience are service providers with online businesses where we do coaching and we have things like digital products. Now I'm going to wind back because you started by talking about a lead magnet. And how would we create one of those that was more inclusive? How do we even start that process? Because that will then help us attract a more diverse audience, won't it?
Absolutely. And before we even get to creating that lead magnet, we need to think of who is our ideal client. A lot of times, Sarah, we think of our ideal client as past me. Me 2 years ago, me 5 years ago, and I am here to be that support person to help them through that hurdle and lead them. A lot of the times we are looking through that lens of who we identify as. Okay, so this is me. I identify as a white person. I went to this school. This is where I go for shopping. This is where I spend. So we're looking at the demographics. We're looking at those physical aspects of who that person is. And I think we're taught that way. When we're taught about who our ideal client is, we're really taught to think about them from the demographics rather than the psychographics about their values. What kind of values does this person possess? Will they be a good fit? What am I looking at that they're lacking? I can support them regardless of their race, regardless of, you know, how they identify. Can I still support them? So we need to go back to that client, ideal client avatar to make sure that we're not being biased from that perspective. And then when we go ahead to create a lead magnet, and where I find issues is particularly lead magnets that are quizzes. And you're giving people options. Are you A, B, C, or D? Are you one of the Sex and the City characters? You know, which one do you feel? And I'm like, I like this character, but I don't necessarily see myself that way because they're all white women. I don't see myself in that way. Or you pick where is a location that you would most like to, you know, holiday in. And it's all perhaps European. There isn't anything that is perhaps African or Asian or anything. It's all very Eurocentric. And so in so doing, and you don't even realize you're doing this, Sarah, but it's how you've been brought up. It's what you've been exposed to. Music as well. You're just picking a certain kind of genre. And when you do that, you're, of course, handpicking the people who look and sound like you without even knowing it. Open up the doors and here come your clients. And they're all the same. Why? Because when you were doing the work in terms of attracting that ideal client, you left out key things that you didn't even identify, you didn't even know in the first place.
Wow, that's so interesting. And we were talking before we started recording about my mastermind, and I'm sitting there thinking, because my mastermind is full of beautiful people who are really kind souls, really generous, really motivated, but they do look like me. That's the truth of it. So, and somewhere along the line, I have applied those biases in my business, which is kind of hard to think about because it feels very uncomfortable. And I'm thinking to myself, what have I done that has happened? Because I my ideal customer is not me 5 years ago, because I've always worked in marketing. So I can't identify as someone who wasn't a marketing expert because that's all I've ever been. I have put that bias somewhere in my business and done that, and I don't know where. So if we've done that, what should we be looking at?
I think it's doing an audit is a really, really good place to begin. Doing an audit to see who are the people in my network. When I am on social media, who are the people that are coming up on my feed? Because again, if it's people who look and sound like me, you're just continuing in that same bubble, in that same sort of group, and you're none the wiser. So it starts with an audit, looking at your connections. Who are you connected to? What are the things that you're liking? Who are the people that you're following? Who are the people that you're learning from? Where are you spending your money? And once you do that, also now getting a little bit granular and looking at your business and doing a little bit of an audit, looking at, my lead magnet, the services I've created, the kind of marketing that I'm doing. When I have questionnaires, what kind of questions am I asking in those, getting to know my clients first before we've even worked together, you know, having that discovery call, you know, the criteria with which people are coming in. Do I have accessible pricing? And by the way, having accessible pricing doesn't mean that's the only way to attract, you know, people of color. There are people of color who have money and who can afford to work with you, but it's thinking more from an inclusive lens. So it's doing that audit to see what am I missing here? What could I be doing better? But also having a heightened awareness of, I do have a bias. I do have unconscious bias that I'm not aware of. How can I begin to not just be curious, but begin to educate myself because I don't know what I don't know. And if I can begin to dip my toe into this work of racial equity so that I can have a little bit of an understanding, I'll be able to go back to my marketing and look at it differently and maybe cringe and go like, I didn't realize I was doing this. It's a little bit better, but you don't know what you don't know until you dip your toe into this work and you realize these are the biases I have. These are the areas where I'm being exclusionary and I can do way better.
Oh, I love that. It's for my listeners, I've connected with Annie and I've accessed some of her resources, and she has some amazing resources to help you I look at what some of those are. And when I think I was one of your lead magnets, and when I was reading through it, the interesting thing was I don't do the things that it mentioned, but I also didn't even realize that it was a thing. Like you're saying, you don't know what you don't know. So I was like, oh, that's the thing, is it? Like, and we were talking, Annie and I were talking before we started recording about pronouncing people's names. And that's a real bugbear of mine because my maiden name was a non-English name that Australianized because it was too hard. And as a result, we went by the Australian version of that name because it was too difficult. And you kind of grow up just going, is it that hard, like, to learn how to say my name? Like, and when I lived in the UK, people had no trouble with it because they're much more, they speak more languages over there than Australians do. And it's something we kind of accept, isn't it, here? And I'm ashamed to say, I think in Australia, we're particularly bad. And my husband's from New Zealand. He always makes a joke about how racist Australians are. Because he comes from a culture where it's simply not like that. And we think we're very similar to the Kiwis, and we're just not. I don't know if it's how we started our nation or what it is, but it's just under the surface.
Possibly could be. And the thing is, you know, when whiteness is deemed the bar, you know, standard, then even for people who are not white, people who don't identify in the what have been classified as the standard, and the vast majority, you do minimize yourself. If you cannot pronounce my name, Annie Gichuru, I'll kind of go like, yeah, whatever kind of sounds comfortable for you. But I've lived here long enough to know that I will correct somebody. My name's not that difficult anyway, so a lot of people do get it right most of the time. But I have gotten to that point where I will correct somebody. I will tell them, by the way, this is how you pronounce my name. Whereas before, because of that marginalization and the fact that you are not the standard, there, it's a way of trying to fit in and not wanting to call attention to you're already different, you know. Yes. So if somebody calls you something, you're like, yeah, that's fine, you know, just yeah, I'll go
whatever.
Because you don't want to amplify who you are. You already feel so like you don't belong. And so if that is what is going to help me belong, then we kind of toe the line. And in many cases, we end up perpetuating systems of exclusion. We end up perpetuating those racist tendencies without even knowing it, because we're giving people permission to say things that are not correct because we want to just keep things as they are and not stand out and not, you know, cause friction.
So rubbish. Can I just say that? I'm sorry that has been your experience. And I just feel, and just for my listeners, I've had Louise on here before, who's an etiquette coach, and she's one of my favorite guests. And one of the things she says, and I want you all to hear this, is that it is completely acceptable to ask someone, how do I pronounce your name? And to repeat it back and ask, did I pronounce this correctly? And it's always preferable to do that than get it wrong or just go, oh, just guess whatever your name is, whatever. Like it. And so if you're thinking, is it rude? The answer to that is absolutely not. Feel free to ask, repeat it back and ask for confirmation. So I just want to give people confidence to say that, because I think also, and Annie, from a perspective of trying to be a better person, I think we think, well, is it rude if I ask you how to pronounce my name, how to pronounce your name, or is it rude to do this? And I think what you're saying is, ideally, we want people to make mistakes and ask rather than just absolutely get it wrong.
Absolutely. I'd rather you asked me and we took the time to just kind of establish that than keep asking me, would you say your name was, or tell them your name, you know, then it just becomes very othered. But I guess I'm also in spaces now where it is so normalized to ask, could you tell me how you pronounce your name? You know, I guess it's because of the work that I do. I'm very much in spaces where this is normal conversation. Tell me how to pronounce your name. Tell me, how do you prefer to be called? What are your pronouns? I'm very much in that kind of line of work. And so it's very normal for me.
But I want my audience to know that we can make that normal as well, because by doing that, we're giving acceptance to people and we're not making them feel uncomfortable, and we're not reinforcing, like you said, the fact that you're feeling uncomfortable in a room and you don't want to stand out. So we are creating inclusivity when we do those tiny little things that we do.
Yeah. And you know what, Sarah, as space holders, you're holding space for somebody. And so those first impressions, how you make me feel when we meet, how you talk to me, how you acknowledge me, you know, those, and minus the microaggressions, because again, microaggressions is an area where a lot of people kind of fall into and, you know, just end up making a mess in terms of introducing themselves or speaking to a person of color, you know, questions like, where are you from? No, really, really, where are you from? Especially for me, if I say, look, I'm from New South Wales, they'll be like, no, originally, like, where were you born? And if you're still born in Australia, but what about your parents? You see, it becomes this kind of argument of, you're really not from here. And it continues to reinforce, you don't belong, you don't belong, you don't belong. But this person is probably doing it unawares, trying to strike up a conversation.
Yes. And it's completely okay, because I'm a first generation Australian. My parents are immigrants. They just happen to be white. But my grandparents didn't speak English as their first language. So it's really interesting when you say that, because I feel like I'm very close with my mum, and I'm very close with my sons who are teenagers. And the exciting thing is I look at my boys and they do better. A lot of that behavior that we see, the microaggressions, is really being phased out, which makes me really excited for what's to come. But I look at, and I know my mum doesn't listen to this, and she's a lovely human being, but we were at my son's graduation and he was standing on stage, and the girl standing next to him was of African descent, and her name is very African sounding. And my mum said, where's she from? And I said, she's a first generation Australian like me, mum. And that's the truth, because she is. I know she was born here. She's been at school with my son for years and years. I know she is Australian, just like me. Her parents are not. They were immigrants, just like my mum was. And it kind of annoys me, because I feel like my mum's a really kind person and she can do better. And I kind of want to call her out in the nicest possible way. And so that's kind of my way of dismissing it, saying she's Australian like me, first generation. But it's really hard, that older generation, we're still seeing a lot of it, but the next generation I'm excited for.
Absolutely. And I love what you've mentioned there, kind, the word kind. And I think that's what trips a lot of people up when it comes to doing this work. A lot of people look at racial equity or anti-racism work, if you want to call it that, as, no, that's not for me. I'm a kind person. I'm a nice person. I'm a good person. I smile at people of color. I have friends who are people of color. They come over, you know, play dates, sleepovers, and all of that thing. And then that becomes the barrier, because you're looking at yourself above, you know, prejudice, above unconscious bias, above racism. And you're saying that is for the extremists. That is for the neo-Nazis, the, you know, extreme right, white nationalists. It's not for somebody like me. And that's where we make mistakes, because yes, a lot of people will look at this work and go like, oh, that's not for me. I'm good. I have black friends and people of color and Aboriginal friends. That's not for me. But oh my gosh, is it for you? Because when you assume to know, that's when you actually don't know. And especially if you're not plugged into this work and you just think, by virtue of association, by virtue of friendship, I am inclusive. That's the biggest mistake by far I see people making. But when you approach this work of, I'm curious, I want to know, I want to understand things, how can I make my business more inclusive? When you start digging into it and you pull layers and you're like, oh my gosh, I do this. I had no idea, but I'm a nice person. Is this saying that I am now right? No. Like, there's just so much awareness and so much eye-opening that this is work that I think all humans, but more so space holders, need to undergo. They need to undergo this kind of work so you can understand, how can I do better? How can I be a better human?
I love that. Oh, Annie, I have to say, listening to you talk has really inspired me, because I certainly approached, as I said, we were introduced to someone in my mastermind, Tanya, and when she started talking about it, I thought, I'm really curious about this, because I think I'm doing okay, but I'm certain I can do better. I'm certain I can do better. And when I've got your first bit of material, I was like, yep, I can definitely do better. So I don't think we have to berate ourselves, but we have to have an open mind and bring curiosity, because I think we all want to run businesses where we feel really proud of how we operate. And if that's where we want to sit, I mean, we want to say, I feel like I'm doing a really great job of being inclusive and I've looked into this and this is what I've done. That's, I'm pretty sure most of my listeners want to feel like that as well. I think that's how we all want to feel. Not just that I'm kind. That's like the minimum bar.
Absolutely. Kind of like give it. It's the minimum. But I think if we have more inclusive spaces, then you'll see more people from different backgrounds feeling comfortable to find out a little bit more, feeling comfortable to be in a room. Like for me, because I've called Australia home for so long, I am now comfortable being uncomfortable. Like if I am in a room where I am the only Black person, which happens majority of the time when I am in, you know, events, I'm just comfortable being in my own skin because I've learned to just get comfortable being uncomfortable. And I've learned how to navigate language and being in those circumstances. And I guess also given the work that I do, I have built a stronger backbone for this. And so if we are in, and you can tell people who have done this work, it's how they talk, it's how they treat you, it's how they look at you, it's the opportunities they give you, it's the door, it's where your name is mentioned in rooms where you have no idea they even exist. There's a lot that can tell you this person is doing the work or this person is highly attuned to being inclusive. And you can tell those who are not. You really can.
That's so interesting. And I hope for all my listeners you heard that, because I know that we all want to be inclusive. And if it can be seen, then we need to put in the work and we need to put in the effort. So Annie, thank you so much for being a guest on my show today. For all of my listeners, please go and check out the show notes. We have got all of the information on how you can connect with Annie, how you can work with her. And I'll be really honest and say she has amazing free resources on her website, which is a wonderful place to get started working with her, because it will start your journey and it will open up your mind and be curious to what does this look like for you and your business. So Annie, thank you for your time today. Thank you for generously sharing your wisdom. I am incredibly grateful. And it's just been a delightful conversation.
Oh, Sarah, thank you so much for having me. I've loved this conversation so much.
My pleasure. So to all of my listeners, thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you the same time next week on The Social Circus.
Thanks so much for tuning in to The Social Circus. As your host, Sarah Thompson, I am thrilled that you've chosen to spend your time hanging out with me. I would be so grateful if you could spare an extra moment to go and leave me a review on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you even felt more excited, you could share my podcast with your friends who you think would get great value from it. Thanks so much again for tuning in.